May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be now and always acceptable in thy sight. O God, our strength and redeemer. Amen. In Genesis 6 we read, "Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence." Well, good morning. Welcome to St. John's. This time last year, we were, I don't want to say languishing in the academy, because we had quite a good time in the academy, and they were very generous. But this time last year, this was all being reordered, so I think you went to the Methodist Church. So it's great to have you back. And it's, of course, Remembrance 2014. So, it's Remembrance 2014, 100 years after the outbreak of the First World War. Now, this will make, I think, this remembrance slightly poignant and slightly different. Slightly poignant in that we're remembering something none of us can remember. How does that work, then? Forgive me, I don't think anybody here, I can see one or two older people, but I don't think anybody here is over 100. Forgive me if you are. But we're remembering something that none of us can remember. So what do we do instead? Well, I think what we're doing is perfectly valid, is we're commemorating today the outbreak of the First World War, which is a good thing to do. But how do you commemorate the fact that we're commemorating that men, women, children were legally and lawfully killed on an industrial scale? How do you deal with that? A war in which, the numbers have been disputed for 100 years. A war in which, on a conservative estimate, 10 million military personnel died. That's just the military, 10 million. 2 million others died from diseases such as cholera, typhoid, TB, venereal disease, measles, mumps, scarlet fever, smallpox. So we're up to 12 million now. That's just military personnel. The civilian deaths, should we double it? Triple it? And then what about the people who survived but were maimed, blind, mentally disturbed? What about all the widows, the widowers, the orphans? What are we commemorating, ladies and gentlemen? Violence? Doing some research on this, the shock to the national psyche was immense. Immense. Just remember where we are. The Victorian age has just finished. That Victorian age, Queen Victoria died, I think, in 1901. The Victorian age, I went to the National Portrait Gallery a few weeks ago. You go to the section where it's the Victorian age, and it's these men full of confidence. Top hats, standing. A hugely confident age. We had an empire in which the sun never set. Industry was booming. The economy was booming. And we believe Darwin. Darwin had said, "Listen, folks, you've got to understand something about us lot. We're going better and better all the time. We started in some primordial soup. We then became amphibians. We then became onto dry land. We then became apes. We then became human beings. And the trajectory is clear, ladies and gentlemen. Who knows where we're going to end up? Hitler said we're going to end up in some master race. Could only get better." And we believed it. We believed it. And then the guns started. After that long, hot summer, when everybody in England, it seemed, was playing cricket and swimming in salmon-filled rivers, the killing fields opened for business.
The first shot on our side was fired on August the 22nd, 1914, by Dragoon Guard Ernest Thomas on a German cavalry unit in the village of Casto in Belgium, and then the slaughter began. So, I guess we're commemorating that. As I said, the shock in the national psyche was huge. D.H. Lawrence said it's as if a wound had opened up in a side that would never heal. No longer could our authors and novelists write novels like Jane Austen. We couldn't write a novel like Sense and Sensibility anymore. That's when we had a centre. That's when there was order in society. That's when convention ruled and we all knew our place and it was peaceful and ordered. We went from Jane Austen's Sense and Sensibility to Lady Shatley's Lover. We went from Mansfield Park to Ulysses. But it was W.B. Yeats who I think summed it up. Listen to this. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart. The centre cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. He said, a second coming has arrived. It's slouched into the world to be born, sullen, rebellious, arrogant. Because we've now no center. What authority structure is there to hold us together? We have entered a new age. It's slouched to be born in Jerusalem, W.B. Yeats. A new age in which the claimed rights of the lone individual will ride roughshod over the wisdom of the millennia. An age in which one man's ignorance is as good as another man's knowledge. And he talks about the ceremony of innocence being drowned. What's that, the ceremony of innocence? It's baptism, isn't it? What's more innocent than a child? What's more of a ceremony than a ritual washing of water? And what W.B. Yeats is saying, in this new age of the slouch to be born after the First World War, faith will be overrun and destroyed. Boy, that's prophetic. Faith will be vanquished, for the men and women of faith will now lack all conviction. They'll be put to rout by an uncentered, a decentered, a centerless, intense passion. I don't think we've got over it. I think we're still living through the consequences of that. And it seems that now we're enthralled to violence. The First World War just gave way to the Second World War. If Mr. Putin's correct, it's going to be a Third World War in due course. I don't know if you've seen that new film, The Fury. It's a war film. So I thought, you know, I'd go see it. So I always asked my wife. I knew she wouldn't want to go see a war film. But I thought I'd invite you, would you like to come see this film, The Fury? She said, who's the actor? I said, Brad Pitt. She said, no thanks. What is that film about? I don't know if you've seen it. It's a film about a naive, innocent man who still thinks and believes that we're getting better and better all the time. Still believes Darwin. And he's a young intellectual, and he's never been in war before, and he's going to go into a hole and then into hell, into the tank and into the hell. And Brad Pitt, turns to him and says, look, young man, you've got to understand, ideals are peaceful, history is violent. History is violent. Now, I don't want to surprise anybody here, but actually, if Brad Pitt had read the book of Genesis, written by Moses 4,000 years before, he would have understood this. Because that's the Torah. It's written by Moses, opening book of Genesis. It's also part of the Christian Bible. And what Moses, the lawgiver, the sage, the prophet, said, that at the dawn of time, in the midst of prehistory, God looks down on the earth. And he saw that the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. It says it twice. But sometimes when I repeat myself, people say, Vicar, you repeat yourself. I say, I know. The reason why I repeat myself is what I'm saying is important, so I'm saying it twice. So in those few verses in Genesis, it's twice that the earth was full of violence, so I guess Moses is trying to make a point that Brad Pitt just picked up on. The earth is full of violence. History is violent. Now, how do we best commemorate, then, the slaughter of the First World War? What do we do best? How do we cope with it? I think if all those men, women, and children would rise up alive today, and they'd look at us and they'd say, what on earth has happened to you? We died for peace, and you're still fighting. What's that mean, then? So I think the best way to commemorate is at least just try and stop for a minute and say, okay, the earth is full of violence. What can we do about violence? Let's just try and think for a moment. I mean, just in honor of all those people who died, let's try and think, how can we stop this violence? What do we need in our hearts and in our lives in order to mitigate and stem violence that's in the world? Now, I have to say, and you know, I'll give you this. I mean, I think there's been a huge effort on the part of Western civilization in the past 50 or 60 years to do something about violence. And that's to be commended. And basically what we've been saying is, look, violence is there because we don't tolerate each other anymore. We don't tolerate each other. So we've got to start tolerating each other. That's the answer, and it's, to a certain extent, it's true. If we can just be a bit more patient with each other, if we can learn from other cultures and other people who think and believe differently, and that challenges us the way we think and believe, and perhaps it expands our vision and makes us more sympathetic people, great. So, the watchword has been inclusion, tolerance, diversity. I mean, do those words ring a bell? I hear them all the time. The BBC just like, whew. Every other minute, tolerance, diversity, inclusion, wonderful. Politicians mouth it. But just think about it. If that's good, if that's your philosophy of life, if your philosophy is tolerance, diversity, inclusion, let me just say this. There's one thing wrong with it. It's a fatal flaw. You'll have no resources to combat evil. Do you hear that? You've no resources to combat evil. Because if you just say tolerance, diversity, inclusion, ISIS, come on in. Really? Really? If all tolerance, inclusion, diversity, ISIS? What, how are you going to cope with that? How are you going to cope with Nazi Germany? Ah, well, you know, you guys just think slightly differently from us. Never mind, come on in. Really? Now, this, I just want to say this. When you're confronted by evil, you'll be tempted to give in to it. We pray the Lord's Prayer, do not keep us from temptation. What's the temptation when you're confronted by evil? The temptation when you're confronted by evil is to go, oh, okay, oops, violence, that's evil. But violence is natural, isn't it? I mean, you know, Darwin taught us that, the survival of the fittest. We didn't become fit by being kind. We didn't survive by pouring out the milk of human kindness. We survived because we killed, which is natural. A few years ago, I made the mistake of buying some chickens. And there they were, clucking around in the garden. I come in to put them in the coop at night, and a fox has been at them. Just bit off all their heads, left them there. One was even sort of still flapping around. Now, what would Darwin say? No, normal. It's natural. It's what happens. Survival of the fittest. So when you're confronted by evil, you'll be tempted to go, oh, well, never mind. Whoops, that's just the way life is. But the second temptation is, look, you'll want to protect your heart. In us, in you and in me, there's a massive self-preservation dynamic going on. And that's why it's so fascinating, this reading from Genesis, because when he saw that the world was full of violence, his heart, we read, was full of pain, anguish. Now, if you say, oh, tolerance, diversity, inclusion, nice trick, guys. That's just to protect your heart because you don't want to get involved. You don't want to protect. You don't want to fight. You don't want to confront evil. So that's great. Keeps your little heart nice and protected because I'm not going to suffer pain. But your point is, when you love somebody, when you see somebody that you love, when you see somebody who your heart's been bound to them because you love them, your lover, your daughter, your friend, whatever, when your heart is bound to them and they do something evil, your heart's full of pain, isn't it? If you just said, oh, well, boys will be boys, you're protecting your heart. You're not confronting the evil in front of you. And you'll be tempted to do that. So will I. I am tempted to do that. Because confronting evil means my heart will hurt. And I don't want my heart to hurt. But God's heart, we read, was grieved. It was full of pain. Now, when your heart is full of pain, what does that do? That's a spur. That's a goad in your side to push you out into the world, to do something about the evil that you see in front of you. The point is, when your heart is bound up with somebody, you can't let them go, can you? God's heart is bound up with humanity. We're made in His image, and He can't let us go. You know, Romeo, talking to Juliet, he says, Juliet, if I stay with you, I'm going to get killed. He said, morning is coming. I've got to go. The first rays of the dawn, I see them. But what if I say instead that it's not the rays of the sun? What if I say instead that it's not the morning? What if I say instead that the morning rays are the rays of the moon? What if I say instead that that's not the morning sound of the lark, that's the sound of a dog barking? I'll stay with you, Juliet, I can't let you go. So what does he do? He distorts reality to stay with the one he loves. Now, God doesn't distort reality. He is reality. He is the ultimate reality. The Hebrew name for God is I Am. The ultimate reality in the universe. And when God sees the earth full of violence, he says, I'm going to stop this. I'm going to put an end to it. And what he does is, he says, I'm going to destroy the destroyers of the earth. He has to protect his creation. But that act of judgment is actually an act of salvation. Because in the act of judgment, he reaches out and brings Noah and his family and creates a new creation, a new order of existence. You say, Nigel, okay, vicar, sounds good. But what's the source of violence? I don't know if you noticed, but in the passage, God said, he looked at the violence in the earth and he said, the thoughts of man's heart are evil all the time. The violence in the world, ladies and gentlemen, isn't out there. The violence of the world is in your heart. And what you need, says God, basically, is you need a new heart. The prophet Ezekiel, speaking to the people of Israel, says, I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all your violence. Moreover, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit within you. I will remove the heart of stone and I'll give you a heart of flesh. The question is, are you willing to let God do open heart surgery on your heart to change you from within? Are you willing to let Him do that? It's going to be painful. You say, well, give me an incentive, give me a motive. Okay, Jesus Christ of Nazareth. He came down to this world. He was God. He came down to this world, and you know what he did? He sucked all the poison and violence. He took it all on him, and God poured his wrath. God drowned him. God flooded him. God killed him on the cross. So you could go free. That's amazing. I told you God's heart was full of pain. I told you he was going to do something about it. He did. He sent his son, his one and only son, Jesus Christ of Nazareth, to bear the consequences of all your violent thoughts. Do you know, I'll finish on this. When you leave, you'll be given one of these. It's a gospel. These were identical copies of St. John's gospel that were given to the soldiers as they were leaving for France. They were distributed to them in training camps, charity tea huts on the front. They were given by chaplains to wounded and dying soldiers, this gospel of John. Why? What would we give them today, do you think? Would we as a nation have confidence to give them a Bible? Don't think so. We'd probably say it's politically incorrect, can't do it. Back then, they didn't think so. Back then, they realized that in Jesus Christ of Nazareth, he was bringing in a kingdom of peace that cannot be destroyed. That by dying on the cross, taking the consequences of all the sin, violence, and hatred in the world, he was going to remove your sinful heart and give you a heart of flesh. Because Jesus Christ was the mighty God, the Counselor, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. We'll be singing that in a few weeks' time at Christmas. So when you go, take this gospel. It's exactly the same as the gospel given to the soldiers. It was meant to be put in their pocket there. And put your hope and trust in Jesus Christ of Nazareth. He said, come to me. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden. I will give you rest. And you will find a rest for your soul. And not only that, you'll be part of an everlasting, eternal kingdom. A kingdom of peace that will last forever. Now, do you want to be part of that kingdom? You can be. Or you can just be part of this kingdom, this worldly kingdom that is violent. And will continue to be violent. It's up to you, really. But I do urge you to take this and read it. Amen.